Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests are return guests. Terry Bucci is an associate professor at Ohio State University in the School of Teaching and Learning at the Mansfield Regional Campus, but she is also director of the OSU Haiti Empowerment Project. She went to Haiti in March and is going again in June, and we welcome her to the show to help us learn more about what's going on in Haiti since the earthquake. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also a return guest, Randy Cohen. She's been a mental health counselor and supervising mental health counselor for many years in the Columbus area. She works with individuals and couples, and she runs counseling groups and training. And she's also an interpreter for the International Medical Alliance of Tennessee and has been to Haiti with the Alliance in March. The last time you were both on with us before, and I welcome you back, Randy.
Thank you. Thanks. It's nice to be here.
First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about how, Terry, how the OSU Haiti Empowerment Project has changed since the earthquake and what your how your role has changed there?
Mm-hmm. Well, our most recent trip, we were going to go down and have some conversation about how to get started on what we typically do, which is to work with teacher educators and work with the government, the ministries of education, and go to several different schools. So typically that's what we do, and we wanted to try to get that started up because that's important to get that started up again. Right before we went down, though, we were contacted by the organization we were going to stay with, our host organization, and they had an inquiry from some of the people from some of the tent cities. Tent cities are cities that have just been created from displaced people that are coming from Port-au-Prince, typically, and they go to the outer regions. And so they had some requests about education in these tent cities. So this last trip was focused on working with these three tent cities in Quatabuque, which is about 8 miles outside of Port-au-Prince. 8 miles, but that's about a 45-minute to an hour drive to get there. So we spent our time working with these three tent cities, talking with the community leaders and working with them on their vision of education for their children.
Now, a big difference, you said that when you well, first of all, I want to make a distinction for listeners that these tent cities are very different from the tent cities that are in Port-au-Prince. You know, these are not the ones where you're hearing the horror stories. These are more organized. So just so you know that these are different than those, and these three tent cities aren't the only three tent cities there are. There are many more. You said that, Terry, when you left the airport and you hit the road, you noticed, well, when you arrived at the airport is when you noticed the first big difference. You said from organized chaos that had become so familiar from past visits to now just chaos.
Mm-hmm. What's the distinction there? Well, if you've ever been to Haiti, the organized chaos makes sense to you because just driving around in Port-au-Prince or in any place in Haiti, it seems unorganized. It seems just chaotic, but there's a plan and there's a strategy and everything works smoothly. And so when we got off the plane this time, typically we'll just go and get our bags and then we find the people that are going to drive us to wherever it is we're going. This time we came out in kind of this tunnel of people who were all just yelling out to try to get the attention of the people that they were trying to meet to drive them to wherever they were going. And so you just had to kind of scan around, and I found the face that I was looking for. So it was just a little bit different just right off the plane. I knew it was going to be a different trip.
And even between these three tent cities that you visited, you said each one of them had a separate identity.
They really do. And that's when you spoke about the fact that these tent cities are different from the Port-au-Prince tent cities. Each of them, they're basically communities. So they have their own culture, and they've developed their leadership schematics, and it's just they have an identity. So the three tent cities that we went to, the first one was about 3,000 people, and predominantly from people who had come from Port-au-Prince, and they had a leadership structure, and they were, for the most part, like older 20s men and women, And so it was kind of an urban, more of an urban culture than the other two tent cities that we worked with. The other two, one of them was run, the leadership was predominantly from the ministry. And so they had their own kind of subculture in that tent city. That's also one of 3,000. And then the third one was comprised predominantly from people who lived in the Quatabuque area who were affected by the earthquake. So that was typically their normal region of where they lived, but either because their homes were destroyed or they were fearful of being in their home, they gathered together in this community, this tent city in that third. So that was more of kind of a farming community. So they each had their own identity, as well as the communities, the tent cities in Port-au-Prince.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820, and you're hearing from Terry Bucci, director of the OSU Haiti Empowerment Project. Terry was there in March. She's returning in June. And also joining us in a few minutes will be Antoine Levy.
Levy.
Mm-hmm. He is president of University Carib in where is that?
And that's in Delma. Delma is a neighborhood of Port-au-Prince.
And tell us about President
Levy. Actually, I have most of my contact with his wife, who is Jocelyn, and Jocelyn is the rector of University Carib. So we work very closely with University Carib and University of Notre Dame in Haiti on our traditional work, which is with teacher education. So we'll go down and spend some time in classrooms with children and teachers, and then we'll go to either University Carib or University of Notre Dame in Haiti and teach seminars for their teacher education program. So we've worked very closely with University Carib and developed a lot of close connections with the students because we have recurring students that come back to our seminars, and they've had during the earthquake their university was destroyed, the campus in Delma, with the exception of their publishing house, and they suffered great both structural loss but also human loss. They had a lot of students that were in class at the time of the earthquake. So they do have kind of what we consider kind of regional campuses in different areas of Port-au-Prince, of Haiti. And so those are still functioning, and they're working out of those areas a little bit more now.
You know, you mentioned that the third camp was all of them were well organized, but the third camp was comprised primarily of rural residents, mm-hmm. and that they had not received any assistance from relief organizations yet, with the exception of a well that had mm-hmm. been drilled for them. Why is that? Why are there the disparities between what the different camps are receiving?
I don't know the exact answer to
sure.
that. I
do, but what's the sense about that?
I think it's networking. You need to know somebody who knows somebody who can get the people out there. So when we met with these tent cities and with the leadership teams, one of the things they asked us for were tents. And so we made a clear focus on what our role was at this tent city, and that was to help them to problem solve on ways that they could serve the children in their village. But when they asked for tents, we said, you know, well, we don't have tents. And they said, well, we've been writing letters, and no one's answering. And I said, well, that's something I can help you with. So we tried to get them connected with some of the relief organizations, and we found about a week, 2 weeks after we returned, that the people who we'd stayed with through CSI in Haiti, one of them had contacted a relief organization, and they had been out there. So it's really communications.
Right, and that was a big part of what you did in general. You mentioned that you focused on the idea of learning and sharing together, and you said one teacher toward the end of one day said, we don't have enough of our own community. How can we share with others? And you said, glad you asked.
That's right.
This is what the whole point is. What do you tell them? It's something that in many ways we take for granted in our country these days, but it's something that's a learned behavior, really.
It really is. And, you know, you're talking about a country that I mean, they're out. They need to survive, and so that kind of competition or that perspective is just there. And so I was so glad that that person said that, because we've said it over and over. And you know the translation too, because we were talking about sharing a lot and sharing. I tried to say sharing ideas as much as possible, but sometimes you know we just say share. And so when that person said that, it was just another opportunity to say, you know, we're talking about ideas. We're talking about problem solving. And we went into then, you know, if we have ideas in our own community and we work on those and then we share them, those ideas with other communities right in our region, that makes a stronger region. When our regions share our ideas with other region, that makes a stronger department, which is kind of like a state in mm-hmm. Haiti. And then when our states share ideas with other states, that makes a stronger Haiti. So it was really a powerful moment in that training situation when that teacher stood up and said that.
We're going to take a short break, and then when I come back, I want to talk a little bit. Well, we're going to be speaking with University Carib President Antoine Lavey, and then eventually would like to get back to what you do regarding the relief of stress, which is a big issue. And then, of course, talk with you about that as well, Randy, because that's something that's what you do professionally as a stress reliever, as a counselor, and came across a lot of that
yep.
as an interpreter in Haiti. So when we return, we'll be talking more with Terry Bucci, director of the OSU Haiti Empowerment Project. Also joining us will be University Carib President Antoine Lavey and Randy Cohen, who is an interpreter for the International Medical Alliance of Tennessee. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820, and at noon, Fresh Air will be here. On Fresh Air, a discussion with actor Sean Hayes. Hayes is the star of a new Broadway revival of the musical Promises, Promises, but you probably know him best as Jack from the hit TV series Will and Grace. Also, former poet laureate Robert Haas returns to talk about Walt Whitman. Haas has edited a new collection of Whitman poems. That's all on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And remember to get the latest information from our station the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Just go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. It's 60 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 72. A few clouds tonight, a low of 52 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 82, and then rain and thunderstorms for Saturday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820. NPR News.
Patiently wait for some other day.
That's too far away. So right now I say,
when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like the waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back. Whoa, when I get older.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher and our update on Haiti and what's happening since the earthquake there. Joining us now from Haiti is University Carib President Antoine Lavey. Welcome to the show, President Lavey.
Yes.
Are you there?
Okay,
thank you.
I'm here.
Welcome yes. to the show.
Okay, thank you.
Tell us about the university and what's left after the earthquake in January.
Well, as far as our university is concerned, we have been a victim of the catastrophe, the earthquake, as many as five or six private university and the state university have collapsed and are still under the rubble, as far as we are concerned.
How do you operate? Do you have classes?
Right now, we have made effort to resume our activities, and since the university has two locations, one in Port-au-Prince and one in the region of Thibonite, in Montouy, we have started to some classes in Ratibonite, and we have met with the students and the staff members in order to resume the activities. But as far as we are concerned, we are still we still have our building destroyed and under the rubble, and all the materials are in a very bad shape. So we are expecting to start maybe in the second week of May for our classes in under another location.
You lost students in the earthquake.
Yes, we have, like for our part, we have lost around 30 to 40 students and staff members.
What do you need the most?
Mostly, we have to first evacuate the rubbles in order to make some transitional shelters for the classrooms. And since we have also a small application school under the Faculty of Education, we had primary and secondary classes in those buildings. So we have not been able so far to restart those activities.
The staff members and the students, do they all stay together and live together as a community, or are they dispersed every day and return?
No, those students are dispersed in Port-au-Prince, and some of them left Port-au-Prince to go to the other cities. And we have classes in those three buildings that were destroyed, and we are trying to see how we can manage to relocate those facilities or to evacuate those rubbles in order to make, as I said, the new shelters for the classrooms and the students.
What's the biggest problem, or the biggest challenge in getting rid of the rubble? Is it because you can't get the proper equipment?
Exactly. And we have received some organization have made promise to do those evacuation, but so far we have not been able to have those hopes or so those promise to materialize.
How do you communicate with folks there? What are the communication systems like now?
Well, as for the students, we have our site, internet site, the website, and we have our site is www.universitecaraibe.com.
Okay.
Where we can receive the different messages and communicate with different people. We have also a telephone in Port-au-Prince, which is on one number is 3.
You don't have to recite the number, but we will post your website on our website.
Yes,
it's universitycaraibe.com. Right?
Yes.
Okay. We'll post that on our website. This topic of the Haitian earthquake has pretty much, in my opinion, completely dropped off the radar as far as newspapers and other news coverage in the United States. Do you feel that in Haiti?
Well, in Haiti, dans the media, you know, still on board,
okay,
as far as the news, the earthquake, because we have different events, you know, because if I can say, we have still have problem concerning not only like the relocation of people in Port-au-Prince, but also the school, the school system.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to restart the activities, but so far there has been a low, very very slow process. And also with the rainy season coming like in 1 month, it has been a very very the shelter, the transitional shelter, they are trying to put like in order. In other part of outside of Port-au-Prince,
mm-hmm,
to prevent another catastrophe, it has been also a slow process. Although there are many, many efforts made by Haitian and international organizations like USAID, OIM, the International Migration Organization, UNICEF, and all other organization, but still a slow, very slow process.
When you talk about to prevent another catastrophe, you mean when the rainy season comes, mudslides and that sort of thing?
Yes, yes. And remember that it is in the part of hurricanes, like we have experienced in the past years.
So, yeah, tell us about the rainy season. What is the rainy season like there?
Well, the rainy season, like what we call also the hurricane season, starts in June and finish in December. But when the rainy season starts early, a little earlier than that, like in May. And so far we have had some heavy rains, you know, in Port-au-Prince, in other parts of the country.
Now, Terry Bucci, when you work with the University Caraïbe, what do you do? What kind of work do you do with them?
Well, we work closely with Jocelyn, which is Antoine's wife, and the rector. And hello, Antoine, by the way. We usually teach seminars on teacher education, so dependent upon what their needs are. So sometimes they need people who have expertise in reading education, sometimes mathematics education, special needs. Special education has been one of the needs that they've had. So we try to match faculty members from the United States and bring them down. And they usually, we like them to spend some time in actual Haitian classrooms with Haitian teachers so that they have the reality of Haitian schools and Haitian culture, and then they'll teach a 15-hour seminar typically on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And they've gone to both the Mowi campus, which Antoine referred to, the Mowi campus, and to the Port-au-Prince or Delma campus.
How has that relationship changed? Is that what you're going to do when you go down there in June?
We'll be meeting with Jocelyn, and I've been in constant contact with Jocelyn. She wants to start talking about what we do next, and I'm hearing from Antoine that some of the courses are going to start going again. So we will start to work again on what their needs are. I mean, that's what drives our work is their needs. So she'll let us know, I'm sure, what the specific topics are that she's going to need help with, mm-hmm, and we'll go down and we'll help in the campuses that are up. And if the Delma campus has a shelter by then we'll probably go there, and if not, we'll go to Mowi. So I have talked to Jocelyn about there are tents on some tent cities in Mowi, and we talked a little bit about our group in June going with some of their advanced students and traveling to Mowi and working with those tent cities on the same kind of using the same kind of process that we used when we went to Quatre Bouquets and worked with the tent cities. So that's what I see in this first trip to June is really working with our students on the tent city issue.
President Lavey, how are folks holding up emotionally? How is it after all this time?
Well, it was bad at the first at the first moment, and we have beside the or before those regular classroom that we are anticipated for May, we maybe 2 or 3 weeks after the earthquake, we have organized some with our people in the School of Education. We have organized some activities in bibliotherapy for the people under the tent, and especially for the young kids who have been victims, or whose parents were victims of the earthquake. So we had the teams going to the tent cities and doing some sessions, some bibliotherapy sessions. Meaning that we had used educational material that we have developed, and some of them we have do reading session with the kids, and trying to have conversation, have them draw things and speak about their fears and their experience during the earthquake. So those bibliotherapy sessions have lasted for 2-3 months now. We have been going for 3 months, and we also left some teams left Port-au-Prince to go to the Maui region, where a lot of people, a lot of students have left who have left Port-au-Prince have resided in the Maui area, in the Saint Marc area, where we are located.
Now, Terry has said that when they go there, they always make sure they buy the books, the French books, French language books in Haiti, so that you can help the Haitian economy. Are there enough books to buy there?
Well, we have our own edition of children's books.
Okay.
And so that we have developed during the last years. So those books were widely used, and also other books that we could find in Haiti, and those were books appropriate for this situation. And we have before the session, we have trained our people, our team people, to do those therapy session, bibliotherapy session.
Randy Cohen, your role with the International Medical Alliance of Tennessee in Haiti was as an interpreter officially, but you're also a mental health counselor, a very experienced mental health counselor in the United States. And I was wondering, what you see being done there that you think is the most, some creative strategies to deal with what must be an incredible amount of stress.
Well, I think there's a lot of stress, unbelievable amount of stress. Mm-hmm. One of the things... the International Medical Alliance typically it's something very different from what Terry and Antoine are talking about, because we're a medical organization, and we are a group of physicians, nurses, and I go down as an interpreter, and we do this annually. It wasn't just about the earthquake. Mm-hmm. It was we go down and work with the folks on the frontier, the Bates, and we treat them, and annually we give them medicines enough to last a whole year. One of the things that we do, if I could just say a little bit about that, is we bring medical students and residents down with us from the United States. These are typically medical students who have decided they want to become physicians and nurses and whatever, in a very idealistic way, to want to try to change the world and make it a better place. And the way our medical system, our medical education system works, it's so grueling. By the time they're done, they've kind of lost a little bit of that excitement and
purpose,
maybe. Yeah. It gets shifted a little. So one of the things we do, we're involved with the Mayo Clinic, and this past year, we brought down 23 folks from the Mayo Clinic, and annually we bring about 20 students down with us, and they work side by side with physicians, and they're actually doing treatments and learning about global health and they're getting hands-on experience. And in fact, this year we rotated everybody through the Buen Samaritano Clinic, which was now the hospital in Jimani, that happened to be, it's on the frontier. And so that was the hospital that a lot of the reporters had reported from, because it was the only hospital on the border of Haiti and the Dominican. So our students rotated all through that as well. And what they saw was clearly life-changing. And what Antoine was talking about and what Terry was talking about the culture and the community, the Haitian community, is unbelievable. I spent most of my time right on the frontier. I didn't spend a lot of time in Haiti, mm-hmm. per se, because at the time I was there, it was right before the Haitians were all told to be repatriated back to Haiti. And so we were under the Haitian patients were under tents, and the hospital was eventually evacuated back to Haiti. All the patients were.
Okay.
In the time that I was there, the medical students all rotated through there, but there were some amazing stories that happened that dealt with community. One man came in carrying a woman who had been seriously injured in the earthquake, and she had been several days without treatment. And as he carried her in, he was very loving with the way he carried her, and he sat her down and waited patiently for physicians to treat her. And he stayed with her day after day, night after night. He never left her side. Mm-hmm. He cleaned her. He fed her. He bathed her. He did everything. And everybody standing around was making assumptions about who he was. There were people from nine different countries, physicians, volunteers from nine different countries in this tiny little frontier hospital. They treated over, in medical terms, they called it 6,000 patient care days in the first month that was going on. So people were guessing who he was. And, of course, the most obvious guess was he was the husband of this woman. And finally, somebody who could, a translator came up and, because I interpret into Spanish, not mm-hmm. Creole, came up and asked. And they said, "You are her husband, is that correct?" And he said, "Oh, no, 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 no." And then said, "Are you her brother?" And he said, "Actually, no. I found her in the rebel, and I pulled her out. And I lost my family. And I figured she didn't have anybody in, so I am her family." And he stayed with her and just took care of her. And it was really amazing.
That's one way to deal with it, is to take on some responsibility and take on a commitment to something.
Right.
Antoine, thank you for joining the show today. I appreciate it. And we will post the website for the university on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Again, thanks. And we will return with our update on Haiti in a few minutes on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
That's Sean Hayes in the new Broadway revival of Promises, Promises. You probably know him best as Jack from the TV series Will and Grace. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Sean Hayes, and former poet laureate Robert Haas returns to talk about Walt Whitman. Haas edited a new collection of Whitman poems. Join us. I'm laughing out
loud. And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get more radio. The WOSU Spring Membership Drive begins soon. And if we raise $20,000 before May 6th, we'll take one day off the drive. Get more programming and less pledging by making your gift to WOSU. It's fast and easy and will help us reach our $175,000 goal. Get more of the radio you love to listen to by making your contribution right now. Visit WOSU.org/pledgefree to make your gift, and thank you for your support of WOSU 820 NPR News. And it's 61 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40 this morning. Sunshine this afternoon, a high of 72. A few clouds tonight and a low of 52 degrees. Sunshine for Friday and a high of 82. And looking ahead to the weekend, clouds move in, bringing rain and a chance of a thunderstorm. A high of 75 for Saturday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Someone to help you move the obstacles you stumbled on. Someone to help you rebuild after the rubble's gone. We are the world connected by a common bond. Love, the whole planet singing along.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That is We Are the World 25 for Haiti. It's a song recorded by the group Artists for Haiti, and it is a remake of the 1985 hit song We Are the World, which was written by American musicians Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie, and it still brings a little tear to my eye. That obviously we had you listening to the new verse, a rap style and hip-hop, and I love it. I think it's very, very cool. And also joining us now this hour is Dorothy Davison. We spoke with her about a month ago before Randy took off to join Dorothy in Haiti. Dorothy's the director of the International Medical Alliance of Tennessee, and you just returned to the United States. Welcome back, Dorothy.
Thank you. Good to be home.
You know, Randy, before you went, you didn't exactly know what to expect. What surprised you about the circumstances in Haiti when you arrived?
For me, I think what surprised me the most was I thought it would be more chaotic than it was. I don't know if it was worst case scenario, but I found that people were communicating within that chaos, or maybe they were just allowing the chaos to unfold naturally and letting go of things that they might not have let go of typically. I just found that it was amazing. There were groups of people working together who didn't even speak the same languages, who, you know, there's always a couple of egos, but for the most part, it was the stuff I saw anyway, mm-hmm. and the things I heard about were really organized chaos, ironically, yeah, which is probably a little different again because we're coming in from, I was in a way protected by, I wasn't there on the first surge. I came later. So people had a chance to get settled into routines and I wasn't right at the front. I mean, Dorothy's been there since day three of the earthquake and mm-hmm. she just got back to the States 2 days ago or yesterday.
Dorothy, yeah. How's it going over there? The last time you were on the show, it sounded pretty amazing and unbelievable and stressful and overwhelming. How are things now?
All of the above were true. At this point, all of our inpatients have been transferred back to Haiti, repatriated, so to speak. We are re-gearing for the next phase. We have an ongoing commitment to the region because we've been there for 12 years. So we have to continue with our GYN surgeries, with our cataract surgeries, and now an orthopedic initiative as well. Many people are saying they want to come in and provide prosthetics for the amputees, but there's going to have to be more than that. A prosthetic will last a young person maybe only a year before they need more mm-hmm. work, before they need even a new prosthetic. So we want to be in the position to be pivotal in all of this work because Haiti is still basically, at least in the area impacted by the quake, a land of people living in tents.
Randy, there are... you're an interpreter, but you've learned a lot about the culture in the process of dealing with this catastrophe. And I wanted to talk about some of those challenges, if you will, because the cultures are so different. for one thing, just, well, why don't you tell me what the greatest challenge is as you perceive it in serving the folks who are victims of the earthquake?
Well, I think culture is really the most important, understanding what is going on. For one of the things that kept that was pivotal for me was when one of the physicians came and talked to me because he had a patient who was dying, and he wanted to tell her that she was dying. And part of the Haitian culture is you don't tell people that they're dying because their belief is that they give up hope. And so, and he was struggling with, you know, our culture is let's help people prepare, let's help them have get unfinished business finished. And so we did a lot of talking about it, and he did a phenomenal job, actually. In the end, what he did was he talked with the priest who was with the patient and privately asked the priest, please help me understand what your culture says, because that's the one thing we forget to do is ask questions. We're not supposed to know everything. It's really important and very honoring to say, help me understand, you know, so I will be able to help you on your terms rather than coming in with my belief system.
Dorothy, has this catastrophe, I mean, it's the worst anybody's ever heard of, the death and the suffering, has it changed the people in Haiti at all? Obviously, it's changed their landscape physically, and lots of people have died. But I mean, emotionally, at a cultural level, does something like this have an impact?
Well, it has a great impact. I think there's even more despair as they consider what their futures will be. They certainly find that they are besieged with many people saying, "I'm here to help you," and yet the help doesn't always filter down to the poorest of the poor. They are frightened now to be in buildings with concrete roofs, and that's going to be a tremendous thing to overcome. There's not a lot of land area in Port-au-Prince. They can't rebuild on a single-story basis. So, and then there are victims that go beyond the earthquake. The doctor that headed our hospital and all of the work there in Haiti, Dr. Mark Pinard, died on April the 15th of a massive heart attack right there on the grounds of the hospital. So the stress that everybody had been through. We burn victims who are coming in now because they live in canvas tents and they try to cook in them and the tents catch fire. We've seen children with tremendous burns. The international community has got a lot of education to go through before we understand Haiti and understand their beliefs and how we can help them. I don't think it's still clear to all of us.
Let's take a phone call right now. Patrick wants to talk about sort of the intersections of politics and medicine in Haiti and how that's in a book by Tracy Kidder. Patrick, you're on the air.
Yes, I was just wondering if anybody had read or heard of Mountains Beyond Mountains by Tracy Kidder.
Oh, of course. Mon de Mon, yes.
Uh-huh.
Paul Farmer, of course.
Right.
I've been to Conj. It's a wonderful place.
Really? It sounds like it has become that. But when he first started going there, it was just like the worst of the worst. But I just think it was really interesting that, you know, one man's mission, you know, to work in the world to change the way people think about disease like tuberculosis. And I mean, he's done work not just in Haiti, but in Peru and Cuba and Russia. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. Right,
well,
right.
You know, I think it's the hallmark work of all medical work in Haiti when you read Tracy Kidder's book. And were that effort to be repeated all over Haiti, you have to remember, though, that that's one catchment area that Conj covers, but there are many more people that don't come under that umbrella. But it is certainly a guiding light for all of us who would work there.
It's I suggest it to everyone, I mean, even though we're in education, so that they can just become familiar with the culture. So,
Dorothy, what now is the greatest need? From your perspective, what do you need? What is your greatest need to serve the people of Haiti?
Well, as we go forward, it will be funding to keep our initiative going. For Haiti, there are two great needs, and one is affordable housing, and that needs to come very quickly. We're entering the rainy season. And the second is there has to be education. People must be educated. And that those are the two things that I see. I think all other things would follow. Were there basic shelter, we meet their basic needs, and we provide education.
Now, when you're talking about education, Dorothy, you're not just talking about healthcare education and about how to take care of themselves, but you're just talking about reading and writing and the usual stuff.
Right. How will a people understand where they're going if they don't understand where they've been? If they don't know their own history, how will they go forward? We talk to a lot of our patients in great length, and many of them ask us questions wondering if we know these things because they do not. They haven't had the benefit of a global education.
Yeah,
can I? And I think Tracy, your previous guest, Lynn Olson, kind of referenced a little bit she struggled. Mm-hmm. Yes, she struggled with the word to use. I think she ended up with exhilarating on the opportunity, really, that this tragedy affords. So it's the same situation here. You know, the opportunity that the earthquake affords is one that they can take a more progressive approach with education and provide education, hopefully, for more of the people and get all of the private organizations that run the education a little bit more closely aligned so that there's a consistent education in the country. So I think it does afford an opportunity to have some of those changes really take hold.
I agree.
And the things that we as a hospital need to do in our area is education just on health care and sanitation. These people don't understand basic sanitation for their own protection, and they're certainly in a more vulnerable position now.
And in the tent cities that we worked with, the three tent cities, sanitation and health care was, when we asked all of them what their vision was for the children in their community, and sanitation came up a couple of times, just teaching them, you know, what to do, you know, so that they can keep their community clean. Stress came up in all three of the groups.
Right.
So we're trying to recruit Randy to come with us on a couple of trips. And then also just what Dorothy said, just basic education, reading and writing. And so that's what we focused on when we were working with the tent cities.
You know, there's an element about the culture that is a very here and now. There's the past and then there's the present. And Dorothy, you mentioned that the spectacle of what their future might bring is not only something they usually don't consider, but it's, you know, when they do, who can blame them for not wanting to consider it? Randy,
well,
how do you? Right. Randy, how do you help people when they're feeling that way?
Well,
and they have a good reason to.
Right. I mean, part of it is really allowing people to really help them identify what they're feeling and allow them to feel that. And little by little, the trick is to not re-traumatize. And I mean, some people, I know that there were some stories about people wanting to come down, therapists wanting to come down and do therapy right after the earthquake. And that certainly isn't something that was appropriate. The idea is to allow people to identify what they feel, express it, and then how can the installation of hope is a very important piece because people move forward feeling hopeful. Now, I don't know that that happens in a week or a month, because it's really important to feelings have to settle. They have to kind of conjure, move forward slowly. It's not just, oh, aha, I get it, and now I'm done with it. So part of the process is a process. That's the whole point I'm trying to say. It's a process. And desperation, these folks, everything we're hearing, the things we're seeing, is that these people don't have much right now with the onset of the rainy season. We're reading on all our, you know, some people who are blogging now about all the rains that are coming. It rained 4 inches in 1 hour you know, everything's flooded. It feels desperate even now in little pockets.
Dorothy, you talked about the residual or the ancillary injuries from the fires in the tents. Are there others? There was a big fear of disease from the sanitation problems and the exposure.
We're beginning to see some malaria, even cerebral malaria in children, and that's secondary to the standing water and the inability to really control that. And we're entering typhoid season. Typhoid season in July is usually very bad in Haiti and even on the Dominican frontier. We have to be prepared to immediately diagnose and treat these people so we don't have loss of life. And at the same time, we're trying to keep up with their basic needs. These many people, hypertensive, some diabetic, all without their chronic meds, and have to be seen, and medication has to be provided, but they have to have a safe place to keep it, and the tent is really not it. The health care needs are so diffuse that it is difficult to identify all of them, but infectious disease and hypertension are two thrusts.
Dorothy, are you satisfied with the aid you're getting to facilities like yours, or do you still supply all your own medical, all your own medicines and all your own supplies?
We have donors that have worked with us for years. Our greatest need right now is in chronic disease medication. Everybody is asking for medication for hypertension and diabetes, particularly hypertension, and we have exhausted most of ours and are now in the process of buying more and shipping more over there. So more aid is needed, and just simply keeping the hospital open, hiring local doctors to work. Many Haitian physicians are looking for immigration opportunities, because when people are over there providing free care, then we undermine the economy that was there, and we're going to lose those trained people. We need to find a way to keep them there. We need to employ them and figure them into this equation of caring for their own people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that Dorothy probably won't say, which is with International Medical Alliance of Tennessee, nobody gets paid. Everybody is a volunteer. So all the money that people donate goes 100% towards treatment, towards buying equipment, buying medicine. I mean, my plane trip is not paid for. I pay for that, you know. So that's a really important piece, too, that
right.
So people know that is – everything goes towards treatment.
Dorothy, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. That's Dorothy Davison. She's a director of International Medical Alliance of Tennessee. We'll have a link to their website so you can learn more about it. And if you'd like to give, you can learn more about that as well. Also with us today, Randy Cohen. She is an Ohio, Central Ohio counselor, and also an interpreter for the International Medical Alliance. Randy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Ann.
And Terry Bucci, she's director of the OSU Haiti Empowerment Project. We'll have a link to that as well, because they have a long link name. I'm not even going to go there. We'll have a link to that as well in a few minutes on our website, WOSU.org, along with a link to the University of Carib. Terry, thanks for joining us
today. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. We got to go now. It's the end of All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.